This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Welcome everybody, this is Clint Locklear with Trapping Across America. I'm at the NTA and I'm going to be talking with Dustin. A lot of y'all have seen his stuff that he's posted on Wolfer Nation. He's got a neat little product we're going to talk about. You look tired, dude.
I am. I worked 40 hours in 3 days.
Then I drove 8 hours to get to a friend's house, slept on his couch. Then we got here yesterday afternoon and we slept in the UP rail station up here in Michigan behind the MTA, and now we're here.
So. Rail station, what do you mean by that?
Well, right behind the fairgrounds there's a railroad switch station, so every about 2-3 hours a new train comes in. you got all the clanking and the rattling and the screeching and that you can imagine with the train going through, so it's... Plus sleeping on the floor or the ground in the tent, you know, it's a little rougher than a bed at home.
So, and y'all came, you're bragging about your gas over there, but y'all came in an Obama car.
Yeah, a Honda Fit. We were telling you earlier, we had 5 P-stops and we never filled up with gas. I asked him on the 5th P-stop, I says, how much does this hold? And he says, 10 gallons. So, no fooling, 10 gallons of gas got us all the way from Minnesota to here.
Can you trap out of it?
I couldn't. When we were loading up the tent, I thought we were going to bottom out the spring.
So, yeah, that may not work.
No. Nope. Definitely wouldn't work.
So you're originally from Nebraska?
Originally I'm from Nebraska, yes. A small town called Wahoo, Nebraska.
And that is that cornfield country?
Cornfield country with a lot of urban mixed in, a lot of small acreages. You got typically about 3 houses, 4 houses to every section. Creeks in the middle and then farm lanes and everything else in between. Every square mile there's a road going each way. And then people just farm everything. There's no livestock there whatsoever. It's a bedroom community for 3 cities, Lincoln, Omaha, and Fremont. So there's quite a few people around there.
Okay, and you grew up there?
I grew up there, yeah. That's where I grew up in Wahoo. Then I joined the Marine Corps right out of high school and did that gamut for a while and got back and started my own business doing that, and now I trap full-time, so.
So how did you get started? Was it your parents, or?
No. Well, it was.
I kind of know this, so I'm
kind
of
cheating. In a way, it was, but I don't know how old I was. We lived in town. I was probably 2nd grade, 1st grade, whatever. We had a cat lady next door, and they were always getting in the garbage. Like an honest-to-goodness 30-cat cat woman, long gray hair. Stood out on our porch.
The proverbial crazy cat woman.
Yeah, never left her house except to go feed her cat. So we asked the police what to do, and they gave us... The police loaned us a trap to catch him because they were tired of all the complaints. So we had a bunch of bullhead in the refrigerator that we caught in the creek fishing that went bad, and we put a bunch of bullhead in the live trap the next day, walked down there, and... I caught a possum, and I didn't know what a possum was at 1st grade, and it hissed at me, and I screamed like a girl all the way to the house, and that's how I started trapping cats.
Did you ever get the cats?
Oh, yeah, we got lots of cats.
Did she ever figure out that, like, I'm missing cats?
She knew her neighbors were after her cats after a while.
Mm.
When you go from 30 to, like, 2.
to be released... In a cat sanctuary where they were happy.
The police made us take them to the vet. And the vet, if they weren't claimed by anybody, they'd euthanize them. So, yeah, they were released to the vet. We don't know what happened there. But
old lady cat snatcher.
Yeah, that's how it started. And then, I don't know, I was middle school. We moved out on an acreage. And... The guy that we bought the land from farmed the whole section around us, and he had some beaver problems. And me being the hunting woodsman type deal, I said, yeah, we'll try and catch a beaver. And I didn't have no traps, didn't know nothing about trapping. Mike Lubin, our game warden back home, loaned me 4 330-count bears. Looking back, as I think 5th, 6th grade.
Seems kind of dangerous.
Just giving a kid 4 330s and say, hey, go play in a creek on a beaver dam probably wasn't the smartest choice, but I lived. I think I caught like 3 or 4 beaver the whole year. And
you probably had a blast.
I did. I had a 3-wheeler and a trailer, and I'd go check the same 4 traps every day, and it was really productive. But no, it was a lot of fun. Then we started getting into a little coon trapping. Did that. Then I kind of took over in the coon hunting a lot, going out at night with buddies with spotlights and doing the coon hunting thing. And then I didn't really trap at all in high school.
Is that legal in Nebraska?
Yeah, it's legal. You got to be outside of a vehicle, and you can't be on any sort of ATV or anything. And you can't do nothing from the road. But yeah, everything else is legal to coon hunt.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's thermal's legal, night vision's legal, all that stuff there. So
you're using that in about the 8th grade?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all that night vision in the 8th, yeah. No, we actually had a yellow lab and 22 long rifle and a maglite spotlight. We did pretty good. Fur was actually, there's a little spike in there. Fur was pretty good money back then. We were getting $20 for a carcass coon, and I think I got $40 a piece for my beaver, so that was pretty
good. Work at McDonald's, didn't it?
It did. It did. And, you know, that's probably what sparked the interest. You know, I could make money trapping, so I went to the Marine Corps. I didn't trap much in high school. I did a lot of bow hunting and upland bird hunting. And I went to the Marine Corps, did that for 5 years, come back, and got a job in aviation. Absolutely hated it. I worked with the same people. I didn't see nobody. I didn't even have a window where I was working. So I said, the heck with this. I got a job doing boiler work, and I started my own business on the side doing lawn and garden work.
Because you had to fix my when you came down to the school.
Oh, yeah, your pole start. Yeah, yeah.
That was handy for me, by the way.
Yeah, we worked. If you knew how many. My stepdad owned his own outdoor power repair business, and I did that from the time I could walk all the way until I graduated high school. So it was a natural step for me to get out of the Marine Corps and start my own business in that.
So where did you start getting serious about tractor?
Oh, I guess it was...
You need some coffee, dude?
No. I guess the way it got started is I killed a lot of deer in my life. Not to brag, but I bow hunted a lot. And that wasn't doing it for me anymore. And I was starting to...
Goats get boring after a while, don't they?
They do. Well, we're going to try antelope out here in the new job, see what they're like. But we started a business, and it took off really well. I mean, everything was going great. But the more I got invested into that business, the more I hated my life, what I was doing. It's just honest to be. I mean, everybody says, oh, yeah, you're doing great. We actually had two stores. We had one in Fremont, Nebraska, one in Wahoo. And that's the spring I said, you know what, I got to figure out something different. So I went down to Texas, took instruction from you. My brother kind of said he's doing some coon trapping again, so I kind of started doing that with him. And I said, well, maybe I can make some money trapping, so that's what I did. Just kind of evolved from there. I went, took instruction from you, come back, and thought I was going to DP the world with coon, and got my butt handed to me. And then...
I want to go back to something before we get into trapping, because you said something a minute ago that I think people should hear more often.
What's that?
You started your own business, had two stores, you were doing good. I'm sure you were making money.
Oh, yeah, we were doing...
And you were miserable.
I was miserable.
To me, that's a big lesson. Money is not the end all.
Money is nice. I mean, it allowed me to do stuff. But when you had money like that, you'd go buy stupid stuff that you didn't need because you were trying to buy happiness, and you just can't do it. I mean, I raced four wheelers, and if I wanted a gun, I bought it. If I wanted traps, I bought them. If I wanted anything, it was I didn't have no kids. I just whatever. But after that, we shut down the Fremont store and we started downsizing, and then I started trapping full time in the winter. And then I actually wanted to get out of the shop 2 years ago, I guess you could say, but the money was good enough where I couldn't let it go with the money. But finally I just said, the heck with it, we're done with the money, and we went trapping full time in South Dakota.
So when you say trapping full-time in South Dakota.
Yeah, full-time. It's not fur trapping.
You're like a little G-man now.
I'm G-man.
Government man.
Oh, yeah, government man. Yep, that's what we do. We help out the the sheep growers out there around the prairie of South Dakota. If anybody wants to get into it, It's a great job. I love South Dakota. My boss is awesome. They supply a truck. They do everything you possibly could need within reason, of course. And you go protect the sheep.
But it's different than what
we're doing.
From one code control guy to the other, I I'm going to make an assumption here.
Okay.
You were probably envisioning this romantic idea of running around the prairie of South Dakota, probably with a cowboy hat and one of those long trench coats, carrying a six gun, chasing stuff and all that. Which you do, maybe not the trench coat or maybe not the cowboy hat, but the reality of the control work on that scale is very different than you thought it was.
Way different. Everybody thinks the government's out to shoot every coyote they see, and that's just not the case. I mean, you could try and do that. They've been trying to eradicate the coyote for years, but that's just not the case. We set up perimeters around the sheep growers, and we just kind of manage that area. So we just mainly focus around the sheep guys. If cattle guys are getting killed on, we help them out too. But mainly just the sheep growers is what we're trying to protect the most. What it takes money-wise for us to do our job, a sheep farmer could never afford that, in my opinion, without some sort of help.
Now, are they set up like Montana, where they have a sheep and cattle tax or a predator tax on those animals?
Yes,
like $1 or $2 an animal.
As far as I know, I don't want to say too much because I'm not 100% sure, but most of the money comes from licenses to do our job to control that. But every county does have a tax and a predator board that you got to answer to. So yeah, there's tax money that goes towards predator control too.
Well, I mean, if you're working for the state, it has to.
Correct.
And at least that's a service you're actually doing somebody some good.
Yeah, it's I'm as conservative and don't like big government as much as anybody, but I think government trappers are probably one of the first legal, legit government jobs there was. If you look back in history, I mean, that's everything from getting rid of the wolves to helping out all that stuff. It's
well, even you being from the West, and see when guys from the East, especially when you're throwing in the Beaver, and we're not going to make this political, so don't get nervous on me, but it's so different in the East the way that they run their programs, where they're not needed. Really, they don't need, like in the way they do North Carolina and places like that, the way that they run that, they're like bullies against private guys. But out West, the difference that I saw, like going out to Craig in New Mexico, those countries are so vast. And at the time, like we'll probably get into how long it took you to get one coyote, a fur trapper cannot afford or is willing to do what you're doing. So it's not like out there you're not competing with the guy trying to run a business.
Yeah, I mean, I got ranchers that trap coyotes in the fall, hunt coyotes, shoot coyotes, and they have no problem with us going in there and bothering coyotes because they got such a feeling. I mean, there's just so many coyotes, it just keeps trickling in. And in that time of year, I've never had a rancher even. I love the ranchers, but go even hang a snare on their own. Very few. I mean, I got two or three ranchers that'll actually hang snares on their own fence. But when they're lambing, I mean, most guys have between 400 and 7,000 sheep, I think, is my biggest producer.
What's a sheep go for now?
Well, bum lambs, and a bum lamb's just a lamb that the mom abandoned. They were selling for $80 a pop.
That's quite a bit of money.
It is. I mean, and when you have a coyote come in and knock out three or four, or a fox take five or six.
And what does a sheep go for if it's full grown when they go to market?
Generally, I want to say the $180 to $200 for a full grown sheep. Plus, they got the wool crop that they take off that. So
that's cool. So you were saying, and this is because I know a lot of people, I mean, you've seen me in Texas where I get tired and grumpy.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're from the outside looking in, what you think's going on and what's going on is so different.
Well, I've never trapped the West, or what they call the West. I guess where I'm trapping back home is more Eastern style trapping. But when you talk to the landowners and you talk to everybody, I expected a coyote behind every sagebrush or every pasture or everything. And when I got there, I was kind of surprised how few, but we had a really, really hard winter. And I know the coyotes' numbers go up and down, but there's not near the coyotes out there that I was expecting. There's a lot of coyotes, don't get me wrong, not near that I was expecting.
But nothing like we had in Texas.
No. 2 years ago, there was probably more than what you had in Texas in spots.
From a cycle.
Just a cycle, yeah. They had a bad drought and they had a really wet year. And I guess everything exploded in that wet year, so I'm dreading what's going to happen next year already. I mean, we got sweet clover that's over my head. I had to put my four-wheeler in four-wheel drive to get up a hill just to get to the sweet clover.
Good grief.
Go try and find a 30-pound coyote and that stuff. It's just...
How would you call in that?
Our hands are pretty much tied this spring for the most part until they started cutting hay fields. I mean, you had some places where they had livestock in there and got the grass knocked down, but I called in several coyotes where they were barking at me. Knew they were there, could probably see where they're at, sent the dogs out, and you couldn't see your dog, so it was ridiculous.
So are these your personal dogs?
Yep.
Or are they the state's dogs?
Personal dogs.
And how did you train these dogs?
I really didn't have to train them. My theory on coyote calling or denning or whatever, if you can locate the den, you go out there at night and you howl or you have a siren, and then you listen for the coyotes, and then you take an educated guess where that den's going to be. And then the next morning, you go out early, you set up on the den, and you call. And if you use a pup distress sound, when they're whelping, generally they'll come to the call because they think a puppy's getting hurt. Well, my dogs, they're just like any dog. You go take a dog to the park, they want to go smell another dog's butt.
Uh-huh.
And they go out and meet the coyote, and the coyote's generally pretty aggressive. They'll bark or yip or kind of bite at them. Well, my dogs don't like to fight too much, so they come back to me for safety. And after about 10, 15 coyotes, it kind of clicked on them. We'll go out there, we'll play around, come back, the boom happens, and I can go chew on the coyote. And that's...
What kind of dogs are they?
One's a black lab and one's a German short hair. The black lab, he gets a little too warm out there, but the short hair, he does really well. He generally sees the coyote before I do.
I'm sure they do. Well, I've used my dog, Daisy, the black mouth cur. And some dogs, no. She figured out after about three coyotes what was going on. So then she would just sit down next to me from the whole time and just go, you want to go get them? You go get them. And she wouldn't play that game no more. So that only lasted with her. She just wasn't a part of it. And I was surprised because she did so good the first time. Coyote runs out. She's used to being queen. She runs out. The coyote start chasing her. She's like going, what in the world's going on? She comes back to me. The second time, she's like looking at me going, you're setting me up.
Yeah, my dogs aren't like that at all so far. So they've actually enjoyed doing it.
Well, I think certain dogs' personalities has a lot to do with that. So being a state trapper, what is your week like? I mean, what do you do? I mean, because government employees, we know just like sleep till 11.
Well, you know,
go to lunch at 12, and they get off early at 1.
I started in March, so I'm pretty new. But my daily routine, I usually wake up, try and get out at sunlight or a half hour before. And generally that's 4 in the morning, 4:30. You pick a ranch. You set up a perimeter around it with snares, so if any coyote comes through the fence, they got that coyote. If you got time and you got sign, you can definitely put some foothold traps in. We do a lot of work with the plane. We locate coyotes around the sheep farmers, so the plane, if you can get them howling and kind of tell the plane where they're at, it definitely speeds up. But basically, we are running from fire to fire to fire in the spring. I mean, when I say fire, from kill complaint to kill complaint to kill complaint. It's not the lackluster of
Long line,
where you drive through the roads and there's nothing on that stock dam. We're gonna haul butt to the next one, and it's nothing like that.
Now, why do y'all use planes instead of helicopters? Does it cost?
I don't know why. I think it's just there's so much ferry time. When I say ferry time, that's coming from where the plane's at to where they're going. It's a lot cheaper to operate an airplane versus a helicopter. I think if you were going to use helicopters, you'd have to trailer it in, and that's just way too inefficient.
Okay.
But I don't know for sure.
So you were telling me today about a coyote. The great government trapper was so efficient on one of them.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, you beat your head against the wall. I mean, when you have a sheep producer that's getting killed on, and you make a perimeter with snares, and then I went to the next, I guess, pasture outside of that. You hang snares, you put footholds on top of footholds, and you can't find no tracks because the grass is knee high, and you can't find no droppings is because they don't mark stuff like normal. It gets frustrating. Yeah.
So how many hours did you have in that one coyote?
I'd have to say probably around 50 hours in that one coyote. We picked up a lot of coyotes in between, but once we took out that final last one, yeah, it was probably 50 hours.
And then you were... I can imagine, because I've had some deer jobs before, where you think that you're, like, on top of the game, and maybe we got the right one, and the phone rings, and it's, we got another dead deer.
Yeah, it's... And
you feel, like, this big. My fingers are really close right now.
And, you know, it would be different if it was, I mean, I guess, it's different when it's a deer because it's kind of a wild animal, I guess. Maybe not in your
down
case.
There, yeah.
Down there, it's different because they're a $40,000 deer. But when you got a guy that's driving around a rusty old truck that, and you look at his house and it's a trailer house, and he's not making, he might be a billionaire, you don't know, but the attitude you get, they're not doing the best. And there's three dead lambs laying on the road from the night before. It makes your stomach just kind of wrench, it really does.
So how did you end up catching that one?
I actually didn't catch that one. I'll be honest, I got a tip from the trapper that worked there before, because, I mean, after you throw everything you got. I mean, the plane flew the place twice. We don't have no trees, and the plane flew twice. They couldn't find no dens. They couldn't find no coyotes. They found coyotes. We didn't find any dens, but you cut their bellies open, then there's no wool. You know, that's not the one doing it. I was a mile and a half away from the ranch. A hayfield just got cut 2 days before. The trapper said we had a problem with one up there, I think 3 years ago. And he had the same problems. And I walked maybe 250 yards from the truck up on a flat, kind of a plateau that they hayed. I sat there for 10 minutes, turned on the collar with pup distress. 3 minutes later, the dog perked up, met the coyote, chased him around for maybe, I don't know, a minute. The coyote stopped to take a dump to Marcus territory in front of the dog, and I dumped him. So, I haven't got no calls, thank God, knock on wood, but yeah, that's, if you're going to be a one-trick pony in this job, everybody says, oh, getters are so effective, getters have their faults, the plane has their faults.
Do you use getters out there?
We do.
Getters are M44s.
Same, we call them both. I think a getter is an M44, I don't know if that's different.
The original getter shot a bullet.
No, these are M44s.
Cyanide.
Spring-loaded cyanide.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, y'all are old school for you loading 38 and 44 shells and those things.
So, yeah, but it was very rewarding once you cut his belly open and he had wool in it.
Oh, well, I bet it was. Now, I'm assuming there's paperwork with a job like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of paperwork. You got to do your vehicle logs. You got to document every kill that you do of all the
animals. Do you have to do stomach surveys on everything?
Certain times of year we do. We do a lot of wildlife surveys for the state. So they, I mean, when we're out there all the time, we got a GPS, and they'll have a survey, like every deer you see, GPS it, all the antelope you see. So it's just not for work. We do a lot of other stuff.
Now, are you having, because of your job, are you like getting into the mice trapping for diseases or some weird stuff?
No. Up there, I think if one rancher found out you were helping another rancher trap his mice, that rancher would be calling the other rancher, chewing his butt. They take coyote control so serious up there that it just...
Well, that's cool, though.
I mean, our predator board up there is an awesome group of guys. They'll do anything for us.
And they supply all your traps and snares. Do you get a wish list, or is it just on inventory?
Within reason, they'll try and accommodate your wish list. I've never had my boss say no on anything yet. I mean, my boss, John, is about as awesome to work with as I mean, I'm not trying to suck up. He lets you do your job, and as long as he's not getting yelled at for you sleeping in the ditch somewhere, I mean, he's... as a fur trapper, I heard a lot of bad things about control guys, but every control guy I've worked with, they take you under your wing. Hey, I'm having problems with this, we'll try this. I mean, it's kind of its own little brotherhood out there. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to be when you're out on the prairie beating your head against the wall. So
you're on the east side of South Dakota?
No, I'm on the very west side. I am 100 miles from Montana, and I live on the North Dakota border, 40 miles from the border.
Holy cow. So you're like up above Spearfish and all that?
Yep, up above Spearfish. And
that's pretty rough country.
There's 32,000 square miles in my county, which is a huge county, and there's like 3,200 miles and 2,800 people. So there's not even a person per square mile up there. So yeah, it's desolate.
So I'm sure that means like you actually check your gas and make sure you got spare tires.
Oh yeah, it's a totally different deal. There's been some times where you're coasting into the filling station on fumes, and yeah, it's... In our town, we only got two gas stations. Neither one of them sells any, like, we don't have convenience stores. In the whole county, I'm not for sure there's a stoplight, to be honest. My wife's favorite food is McDonald's. If you can believe that, I married a cheap wife.
That's sad, man.
We looked it up, like, 45 miles southeast in my district is the furthest place from McDonald's in the United States. Yeah, so it's pretty desolate up there. But you save a lot of money.
How do you spend it?
Yeah, you really can. The people up there are just amazing people. I mean, they're all ranchers, all good Christian people. I mean, everybody's willing to work with you. And you get your butt chewed sometimes by somebody having a bad day. But, I mean... You walk in the grocery store, how many coyotes you get this week? You walk into church, how many coyotes you get this week? I mean, everybody is just very supportive of it.
Well, you were saying earlier, which I think this is so cool, you were moving in, and they actually did an article that someone was moving in and being a trapper.
Yep, they did an article with me and my wife and kind of got our life story. The Predator Board, there was actually a guy that was supposed to fill my position before I got it. He backed out. And the Predator Board made a rancher hold the house for me for about 4 months. He said, please don't let... I think they even offered him money to hold the house so he wouldn't rent it to anybody else so I could have a house to move up there. So they're just very, very supportive up there.
That's cool. Well, let's talk about one of my favorite subjects that no one ever talks about. But I know that...
Politics or
not well besides that, but I try not to. Cindy says I'm trying not to, even when I really want to. I try not to get into that.
It's tough. I was struggling a while. I dropped cable. I don't have cable anymore. We got Amazon Prime and we watch movies. I used to listen to a lot of talk radio. I quit doing that. I don't even know. Some people keep talking about something with Russia, and my wife's like you're ostrich with the head in the sand. But my
but there's nothing my, you can do to change it.
My well-being and my mind has gotten so much freer from not having that. It's so I don't even know what the weather's going to do the next day. I just deal with it as it comes. And
well, when you started writing some of those articles, and you came back, I'm going to pick on you. You don't mind?
No, no, go for it. Pick on me all you want.
When you were down in Texas,
yeah,
and you were getting kind of hyped up here and there about different things.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We talked about all kind of different stuff with business and catches and techniques. And you set a goal out that was, I was shocked. I mean, it was something like 1,000 coons.
I just wanted 1,000 coons, and I wanted to, I think, 10 or 15 cats. And I had
a lot of beaver. There was a lot of animals.
It was a lot in there. And I found out time's a really big deal. It's trapping. Especially if you're married. But my wife's very supportive, so I can't, you know. And I guess, yeah. You don't have enough time to go after all them different animals at once. You just don't, unless you run one system.
And I knew when you called me up or you texted me or emailed me or something, and it was just like, it's almost one of those things that had been funny just to post,
because
you were so frustrated with the dog proofs. You had like 6,000 questions in 2 paragraphs, and then you just went on a rant about you didn't like them and they weren't working. But the cool thing about you is once you went through that frustration, and I could just see you screaming in a cornfield trying to figure something out, you went to, let's try this, let's try this, let's try this. And once you walk through that, because you know a lot of guys, honestly, if their system or what they perceive to be reality, even if reality's not meshing with it, they just stay the course come hell or high water and get their butt kicked over and over and never change anything. And you were like going in eight or nine different directions in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was very frustrating. Very frustrating. I don't know how much money I spent on bait and lure. Dollar General was like, what are you putting into this time? You know, I'm not totally giving up on the dog proof. I just think I think very few people use them to their fullest advantage. And the reason I say that is you could do a lot of work before to make them work for you. In southeast Nebraska, a coon could live off of grasshoppers in October, and he can live off of corn and soybeans for 3 years if they never plant another corn or soybean plant, ever. Plus all the creeks, plus all the crawdads, plus all the frogs, and they just did not care about a dog proof. I mean, I tried skunk, I tried predator baits, I tried sweet, I tried marshmallow. I mean, you name the gamut. Fill in the blank, it went in the hole. I mean, minnows, I went to bait shop and put minnows, like whole minnows down there. Crawfish, like whole crawfish, they didn't care. And then I was like, well, maybe it's the dog proof. Maybe they're scared of that. And so I tried, like, we're going to put in dirt holes. Well, even dirt holes, they didn't produce. So, you know, I did a little flat sets, and that wasn't working. And I was off location, I'll be honest. Not with the dog proofs. So I knew well enough to put a dead center in the trail. But I had a situation. There was a coon trail, and it was a mulberry tree that fell over the coon trail, or fell over a creek, and they were going up the mulberry tree craft and going on the other side. Well, I had 2 dog proofs that they had to walk around, and if you're trapped in the fall, you know, you get that, like, that little dust of dirt that you can see stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are tracks in it, so I, you know, brushed everything off so there was no tracks, and I put in 2 dog proofs. A dirt hole and a blind set as he was getting up the tree. And where the trail was, I don't think he could have, I mean, the grass was tall enough, I don't think he could have approached the tree from another direction. And I come back 2 days later, a day next, and there's tracks, 1 set of coon tracks. He went around to the right of this dog proof, He might have smelled it. He went around to the left of the other dog proof, bypassed the dirt hole, and I had him in a blind sit. And that was kind of the ha-ha moment. Maybe there was something to this. The next week, me and a friend, I put in a bunch more blind sets. They started tripping. Me and a friend went out and put in. We just locked up this one little passageway. There's a gravel road to your right. It was like where the gravel road and highway meets, and a little creek cut through like a, I don't know, 400 yards of it. And we just locked that area down. Every trail we'd put a blind set on. And that's the first cat I caught in Nebraska was off a blind set. So we just started putting more and more blind sets in, and we started picking up more and more fur. And then I found out I could get really, really, I won't say sloppy, but you can call it sloppy putting a blind set. I mean, scrape out the dirt, push the trap, 5-gallon bucket of peat moss over the top, put the two sticks on the trail, and move to the next one.
Describe your two sticks.
Well, they're just...
We're audio.
I know. Okay, you put one at a 45 going at the lever one direction and one at the 45 going the other direction at the lever. And that's it. And just bed a trap, cover it with peat moss. No packing, no sifting dirt. Just a hammer, a claw to bed, put the trap in there and put peat moss over. That's all I was doing.
Are you staking or cabling off?
Staking. Definitely staking. One flaw I was doing is putting too many traps on a trail, I think. I will say that. I was listening to all these big number guys. Oh, you got to put 10 traps on a trail, and I didn't. In my situation, that never panned out for me. I mean, my best thing on one trail, I had traps set. I think I had like 6 sets on there because I thought there was going to be coon. I picked up 2 coon and a coyote on the same trail.
But just in the blind set.
That's it. I mean, you can watch the video on YouTube. The grass is 6 inches tall. There's no blocking. There's no nothing. Just 2 sticks, peat moss. And
how do people find you on YouTube?
Just Dustin Drews. If you look up Dustin Drews on YouTube, you'll find it. But yeah, it's silly how simple.
But isn't that amazing, though? I mean, you went from, I guarantee you went from complicated, and then you ended up as the most basic thing a trapper could do. And I guarantee if you told 300, if you gave a demo tomorrow showing blind sets, because you caught coyotes, cats, fox.
I caught every species in Nebraska for... except for a gray fox and a mountain lion in blind sets. I doubled up on cats on blind sets. I double on cats in blind sets. And it's... I know you have a cat collector video and you got all these things about dirt holes and this. When you start blocking up any trail with either a snare or a foothold, whatever walks down the trail, you're going to catch. So you can spend all this time putting them in this magic set, or you can just follow the tracks to where he goes through a fence line or something and just put a trap there and you're gonna...
Dude, that's too easy.
Well, it is. Blind sets are the only set I've had in my life, and I'll be honest, where you're kind of putting them in and you're like, I wonder what I'm gonna catch today, because you're gonna catch rabbits, you're gonna catch squirrels, you're gonna catch... fill in the blank, you're gonna catch it. I mean, I've never caught a groundhog. I've only seen one.
But didn't that make... I mean, I set a lot of blind sets. And the thing is, it's different than a dedicated cat set or a dedicated coyote set or a coon set. Because when you look over the bank or you look, you know, in the edge of the... you have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, if there is a Bigfoot, it will be caught in a blind set before it's...
yeah. Out. I had 3 traps on one trail. Over a pond dam crossing, and that's about anymore. That's about all I'll put on a trail. It's got to be smoking hot. And I had a coon and a mink, doubled up on a coon and a mink. No bait, no lure, just coyote, the cats. I've had beaver. You think the coon's gonna come in there? You come back and there's a 80 or 60 pound beaver waiting there for you in a blind set. You're like, what? I caught
And you don't have enough otter to be picking up otters.
We don't have otter down there, no.
Okay. Because, I mean, you catch those too. I catch those in coyote trails next to the river.
We, I think I've only seen like 3 or 4 groundhogs my entire life. I picked up a couple groundhogs. And it's just any trail you see, you just bet a trap. And if I was a kid, a weekend warrior or somebody, all these systems that you hear typically are about long lining, I guess, would that make sense, Clint? Mm-hmm. It'd be long lining based systems. You go, you put in your hole, you do this. But nobody really has enough permission lined up to do stuff like that, typically, I think.
For the most part.
For the most part. If you're a kid or you got a little farm or a guy that has a square mile behind his house, if you just went and put blind sets on all the trails, you would be amazed what you'd pull out of that place.
Well, see, to me, that's like perception, and I think that people get confused about perception and reality. You're going to grow vegetables. Perception is, what have you seen your whole life? You see somebody with a $300,000 tractor mm-hmm. in a great big field that plants in a straight row and does this, that, and the other. So you go out in your backyard, and you don't have the tractor, you don't have the land. You know, you're not going to do the implements and all that other stuff that that farmer does, but you try to completely emulate what that big farmer's doing in your backyard. It's highly inefficient on that scale, like what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get the results the farmer does because you're probably not going to pump that much stuff on that dirt anyway to do that. And then, you know, he's picking it with everything's mechanized and this, that, and the other. And it's kind of like long lining. I mean, if you try to emulate someone like what we do in Texas and we go to New Mexico or different places, and you try to emulate that on a before work type thing, they're not really comparable. And you have to adjust what you're doing. You're not going to be very... You'll spend more time in the 3 hours you got before work driving than you do trapping.
Yep.
And that didn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. I mean, if... The only way I think anybody can pile up large amounts of anything in small areas is if you gather up a lot of bait, make bait stations on key areas. Not just put a bait pile anywhere, but on a key traveling route or something like that. About the only way... After being in the business or making all the, I think, a bait station, somehow, some way, you could be a weekend warrior because you got all them animals coming in, but you still got a blind set going to it.
Well, I mean, and I'm sure we talk about this down in Texas, you know.
Yeah, but when a person goes down to Texas, I went down there and I loved it, and you read all these articles and all this stuff, and you want to hear all these trick ponies. You want to hear all these secrets. Well, was that old timers down there? He drilled up.
You know, I still, one of these days, I'm going to run across him. And on my phone, I still have the pictures
of
the coyote. He caught two that he caught with the flowers and all that. I told him to do this. And he was looking for this secret. To me, the secret in trapping is a mafia set.
Yeah.
That is the secret, and it's out there in plain view. People just won't do it.
I don't even think you need the mafia set for coyotes, yes, but even if you just bedded two traps and blended them in, I don't even think you need the turd, to be honest. I mean, it helps, but if you can't find turds, don't worry about it. Still put them in, you're going to catch stuff.
Mm-hmm. So have you taken the blind sets and used them in South Dakota?
Blind sets in South Dakota, foothold trapping is very hard because all the livestock you got to deal with. But yeah, definitely. I played around with a lot of bait and lure and caught a lot of stuff, but when you're trapping pups, it's way different than trapping an adult coyote. You got kind of the different lifestyles of a coyote.
And I'm sure you probably had a crash course on on really what a coyote is.
Yeah. When... I'll tell guys, if you're going to make these baited sets and everything, if you don't have tracks going one way and tracks going another way and a drop in there, don't drop a trap. If you're really going to use these sets, in my opinion, because if you don't have tracks going two ways and droppings, there's not a reason for a coyote to really be there.
See, if you just went against almost every book out there. There's a fence corner, go put a trap. There's a rock pile, go put a trap. There's a fence gate, go put a trap.
My new motto, I mean, I put traps on top of traps out there. If I don't have a dropping, I don't drop a trap. That's my saying. No droppings, no dropping traps. Because
that's pretty snazzy.
Well, the reason I say it, because I put in too many of them sets and they don't... I need to spend more time finding out where that coyote's walking and pooping instead of just putting in sets blindly. Like, if I mean, you couldn't have done it up that... Well, you might have if you found the right track on the road, but... I mean, when you're trying to find a coyote that's killing here a mile and a half away, it's tough to find them, so...
When I was out at Craig's, that was one of the things that really stuck out, because I had the envision of coyotes behind every sagebrush in Montana, and the first time we got out of a truck, and it was a kill, that it killed something 2 or 3 days before, and it was a call, and you know, and he's been there forever, and he goes, a lot of times those coyotes are like four draws over, and they're coming up through this gap, so let's find some tracks and make sure we're on the right gap, or we got to go the other gap. Well, someone from the east, it's a gap, you put a trap. You know, it's a you know, that. For an hour and a half, two grown men walking around baking in the sun of eastern Montana till we found a coyote track. A coyote track. And I was like, this just ain't the right place to be. I mean, if you got to search this hard to find it, because at home, you can go to any road and find a coyote track. But out there, it was... And one thing that really amazed me about that country is it was like one or two out of this family group that was doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And that was it. It's not like a herd coming through.
The USDA did a study, and they said they did it in California. And I think it was 90% of the time or 80-some percent of the time after they killed the alpha male, the killing stopped. But,
well, it's made
sense. Have a wet female that'll do it. You have a dry female that'll do it. You just, whenever one has the wool in the belly, that's generally the one doing it. And I wish I could say, and the ranchers say, you know, we wouldn't mind the coyotes so much if they just kill it and eat it. But when they go kill four or five in a night, and then they eat the hind end out of it, and the next night they come kill four or two or whatever more, and just eat the hind end out of one, it's... I got pictures on my phone I can show you. There's two bite marks on the neck, not anything touched. Dead. That's just frustrating.
Well, to me it makes sense, because the female's back with the pups. Someone's got to go hunting, and it's not going to be the pups. She's got to watch the pups, so daddy's got to go do the hunting.
And you would not believe the stuff you find in front of a den. Lamb legs, antelope, prairie dogs, pocket gophers, mice. There's all sorts of stuff laying around. Believe it or not, goose feathers. Out in the middle of the prairie with absolutely no ponds around, Canadian goose leg and wing. It's like, I take pictures of this stuff and you're just like, geez, what, these things are machines. That's another thing I'll say. Coyotes, I think, we don't give them enough credit of what they do. Coyotes are very efficient at hunting. They don't have to work a hole. They don't have to eat what's in the hole. So if they're just out doing what they do, chances are, unless they're starving to death, getting them to actually work something. I mean, if you're just relying on your bait to do the job, they're very good at what they do.
Well, what you're saying, that's the reason I'm so... I even said it today in the demo, because someone said something about location. I'm like, that word makes me nervous. We need not to be thinking location. We need to be thinking travel way. Because once you get the travel way, then you just have a place on the travel way that you can call a location. But when you get those two backwards, you half the time you're off, well, more than half, you're off kilter.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree with that. Because, if you don't have tracks and droppings, and you're just starting out or you're doing it forever, you're definitely hindering yourself. Unless you're doing control work where... you're putting traps on top of traps to just try and get this problem solved, or figure out maybe the rancher will scare them over here or do something like that.
Well, since you're now a professional coyote trapper and making a living trapping and living the dream.
Living the dream, yeah.
You've come out with a product for muskrats. Why don't you describe what it is? Because you can see this on YouTube also.
Yeah, it's...
I assume, because it came across my phone last week.
I've never been a huge numbers muskrat or mink trapper. And usually I try to catch coon early in the season, and then you switch over to muskrat and mink, and you got the shelf ice, or you got it, just everything about it. I guess you could say, if I can say it, it just sucks because everything's cold, everything's frozen. The water, when the...
You're just living in the wrong spot.
Well, the water freezes, it goes up. The water freezes, it goes down. Your pockets are in the water, they're out of the water. You got to... I mean, so I come out with a product to hang body grip stabilizers off of any pole from 3/8 all the way up to 3/4 inch in diameter. It don't matter if it's re-rod or conduit, EMT conduit, or fiberglass or carbon fiber, don't matter. We took an insulator off the fence post and we kind of supersized it to make it bigger. And then we bolt a spring steel clip to it. And the clip will rotate 360 degrees, so you can use it for a bottom edge set, you can use it for a top edge set, you can use it for a baited set, you can pile grass on top the triggers and turn the conibear into a foothold trap, kind of prevents ring off and drowning that way. And then for mink guys that are running a lot of dry land trails, that clip, if you slide it up towards the spring loop, if you can imagine the clip going around the spring instead of the body grip, push it all the way to the spring eye loop, you can do it as a standard conibear stabilizer and run your dry land trails that way.
Well, the speed of that, I can see, because it's like you're using the speed of a snare kill pole, but you're putting a body grip on there that you can set underwater on the surface or on dry land. And as long as you're not in rock, it's just as quick as putting in a snare pole. And that, and I have to admit, that's pretty slick. And I just caught something you just said earlier, because when I saw what you showed me today, that's what I thought. It's one of the fence post things. And you went and had a mold made to make it bigger.
Yeah. The standard fence post insulator is what got the idea. But we're going to be building other products for 330s and drowning systems and everything. And we wanted snare supports. Most of the stuff that you're going to be using, it's easier to overkill your pole than to try and use a 3/8 pole for everything. Everything on the market now is geared around the 3/8 pole. But when you're doing your trapping, if you want to go snare beaver, you're going to want at least a half-inch to 5/8 fiberglass pole. So we wanted to go bigger. And with a standard insulator, I think the biggest to be tried or found, half-inch rebar is really pushing the limits of it.
So when someone says, well, that's just a fence post insulator, yeah, no, it's not, well, because you can't buy them.
Yeah.
Unless you get them mold made, which is like $3, right?
Oh, yeah. It was only like 50 cents, you know. Took them like 10 minutes to whip out. They made it out of clay. And this product's... Well, I think I sent you some to try, and it was the ones I sent to you were pretty crude. I think that was last January, and then the clip was totally different. The clip's coated. I mean, the clips I gave you were rusting really bad, so we had them coated. But yeah, it's a neat system. And if you look up Dustin Drews or go to YouTube and type in the Reaper Body Grip Stabilizer, or even if you just type in mink and muskrat trapping, I think we pop up and... YouTube already.
Okay, so, but one of the things you can do, which once you get to 330 for an ADC guy, if you've got a 4-foot creek and you really get frustrated with a beaver,
oh yeah,
you can just line solid 330s across.
I played with them a little bit, half inch EMT kind of bows. I don't know, I haven't showed anybody this, but if you use two of them and bolt face-to-face, imagine two of them insulators face-to-face, you turn them 90 degrees so the EMT goes through this way and the EMT goes through this way.
Mm-hmm.
You can adjust the height to any height, and you can run 10-foot of 330s across something.
So, well, I can tell you down in Louisiana, because those beaver get screwed with sometimes, and that water's not that deep. And I've seen some very creative things, and I've done some myself. but I mean, that would be a game changer for an ADC guy. It may not be something that extreme he would use on every places.
Oh, yeah. Well, just like there's that panel system. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing as that panel system, but you're just using traps instead of panels.
So what else are you coming out with this? You got my curiosity. Because I know that you're always thinking.
No, not me. I don't think at all about this stuff.
And I'd say in the prayer, you do a lot of thinking.
Yeah, you do more thinking than you can imagine. There's going to be a trail camera mount or two coming out of it.
Okay.
Most trail camera mounts are like $30. We're going to try and cut that in half. Make them pretty simple. Snare supports, we got them done already. It's a device, you know how I explained going face to face? If you take 2 3/8 T-stakes, you can make, you got a culvert that's a circle, right? And you can slide the T-stakes together or out, and you can adjust the height of the body grips inside the culvert that are hanging off the T-stakes. So you got one T-stake going left and one T-stake going right, and we'll say the T-stakes are 3 foot. Well, you can go from a 3 foot culvert up to like a 5.5 foot culvert, and the traps just hang off the T-stakes. That makes any sense. It's kind of hard to describe. So you can cover up the culvert just by, you don't have to worry about fastening anything to the culvert. It don't matter if the culvert's concrete or
whatever. Well, one of the things, just from all the beaver and otter I've done, a lot of people think otter don't go through culverts, especially in the south, which is absolutely false. You know, especially going upstream, they hug the bottom of them. And I've been hanging off banks, I've been cutting trees, I've been doing everything you can do, because sometimes that water's like 6 foot deep, and my arms are not that long, and you're trying to do all this stuff. And even, and the same principle I'm getting to say, when you have these really deep beaver dens, with that system right there, you just one pole and stick it in the mud, and it's right where you want it to be.
And if you don't know exactly how high, you can stack, I don't know, a 10 foot, you could probably stack 6 traps up and down, and you can put the pole in the middle. I mean, some dens are, I mean, the holes are big. Mm-hmm. You can put a post in the middle and just put 330s off each side, so you can have 4 330s covering the hole versus just one.
I mean, to me, someone that traps like, you know, Minnesota, where you actually have a spring run where they start going crazy, if you were to set those up, 1 to 2 traps for each one, you're talking about flat putting out to covering some creeks. I mean, you'd have to wire it off or cable it off, I'm sure, but just set it, stab, set it, stab, set it, stab, and you'd be down the road so fast it'd be sickening. Probably a lot more than your competition would want you to be.
Yeah. It's a neat system. There's no doubt about it. Everybody that seen at the convention today was very impressed. Every dealer, I guess, I've talked to wanted to take it on, so that was
That's good. Cool deal. Well,
yep.
Anything, other words of wisdom that you have to
if we didn't stress blind sets enough, maybe put in 10 of them on your line and just one day just go do that. And if you're not setting on tracks and droppings.
Well, the blind set thing's one that just, especially with all the teaching I do, there's a trail. And there's tracks up and down it, and you go, well, let's catch this animal, and they go off of it and put a set. And I'm like, why?
I'll never forget it. I asked you, we were mainly cat and coyote trapping down there. And I said, Clint, what's the best way to catch a coon? And we were eating dinner. I don't know if you even remember this. And you said, well, you just take it, find the trail, and you just take 2 sticks, and you were really nonchalant. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. This guy's blowing smoke up my tail, but no, that's. And I guess with that, another thing, if you're not happy doing what you do, don't be stupid and keep doing it, because it's just.
I mean, because life's not a dress rehearsal.
No. I mean, as long as you're not too stupid with your money, you can get by on a lot less.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Well, thank you for having me.
And maybe the trains will leave you alone tonight.
Oh, no, no. I'm sure they got another load of coal or something coming in. Jeez. Yeah, it was.
Well, see, all you need is the train tracks and someone that just bought a new Fox Pro.
Oh, yeah.
Drinking beer between the trains and the Fox Pro, you'd have a great night.
Yeah, I listened to more hours of Fox Pro this spring than you could ever imagine.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I really do.
No problem. Thank you.